The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Appreciate Mr. Brad McDonald stepping in for me yesterday to take over the responsibilities for the Trumpet Daily radio show. We were in France for the weekend, a number of our students here at Edstone, and also my family went down there to meet with some of our loyal supporters from coming from all over France and Belgium. And then yesterday, or I guess that would have been 2 days ago, today's Tuesday, so Sunday, we then drove a little further south from where we met on the Sabbath to tour through some of the sites in Paris, my first time in that city. So we saw some of the more popular sites as much as we had time for anyway. The Eiffel Tower, of course, and then just had a wonderful late afternoon and early evening at the Artist Quarter before we started to make our way back for the trip through the Eurotunnel. That was our first experience on the Eurotunnel as well to this point. The few times we've gone over to the continent driving vehicles, we've boarded the ferries and gone across the channel. This time, though, we went on the train underneath, so another interesting experience for sure. Well, while we were there, like so many of you, I was surprised to see the news of Justice Antonin Scalia's death Saturday evening, at least our time over here. And I know Mr. McDonald touched on that subject quite a lot yesterday, and in fact, I'll even repeat some of the clips that he played for you. He, I guess you could say, helped me to prepare this particular program, did some of the research and the background work to get me ready for this program today. I think I'll have some other things, though, to bring out in addition to what he delved into with you yesterday. For three decades, if you look at that man's work, Mr. Scalia, Justice Scalia, he really was, you could say, on a mission to rein in a runaway Supreme Court. That's what we're seeing in the United States. We've written about this at thetrumpet.com just in recent months, even with some of the ridiculous judicial activism from just a few months ago. And now that Scalia is dead, what will happen to that judicial branch of America's government? What will happen next? Well, there's all kinds of reports and people on talk radio and commentators predicting this or saying this is what should happen, or we have to wait until this and this and this happens, or for the American people to speak up before anyone should nominate the next judge for that position. But we'll look a little bit later at just what has been happening and even what the Bible has said about the United States and about the direction that we're headed in. First, let me just quote to you from the National Review. This is from their editorial board, titled Honor His Legacy, Scalia's Legacy as a Foe of Judicial Imperialism. It says, Justice Scalia was a champion of textualism and originalism in the reading of both statutes and the Constitution, and he was the reliable anchor of the Supreme Court's originalist wing in an era of deep division and conflict with the living Constitution approach to jurisprudence that holds down the other wing of the court. So you have the few that are there, the strict conservatives, constitutionalists. And then you have the other side that believes in the living, evolving Constitution. Brad McDonald went through some of this with you yesterday. Let me just play one clip that he played for you yesterday. This is Justice Scalia in an interview from 2009 talking about the evolving Constitution.
Much of the harm that has been done in recent years by activist constitutional interpretation is made possible by a theory which says that unlike an ordinary law, which doesn't change, it means what it meant when it was enacted and will always mean that. Unlike that, the Constitution changes from decade to decade to comport with, and this is a phrase we use in our Eighth Amendment jurisprudence, we, the court does, to comport with, quote, the evolving standards of decency that mark the progress of a maturing society. In other words, we have a morphing constitution. And of course, it's up to the court to decide when it morphs and how it morphs. That's generally paraded as the, quote, living constitution. And unfortunately, that philosophy has made enormous headway, not only with lawyers and judges, but even with the John Q. public.
It's made enormous headway, Scalia says, and not just with judges, as he brings out. It's really spearheaded by academia. And now so many people, even the public, even the average American citizen, believes that this is a document that's in need of updating. This is another comment from Scalia that he said a few years back. He said, the Constitution is not a living organism. It's a legal document. It says something and doesn't say other things. That's what it is. It's a legal document. And either it's the truth or it's not. You start morphing it, as he brings out, according to evolving standards of decency. And you destroy the foundational work. You destroy the legal document on which the United States was established. Robert Bork, he's another one that almost made the Supreme Court a year after Scalia did, there in the late 80s. In talking about the evolving Constitution, he said the truth is that the judge who looks outside the Constitution always looks inside himself and nowhere else. What seems right in his own eyes, in other words. Let me just play for you what, just a bit of what President Obama said Saturday in response to the death of Scalia.
Good evening, everybody. For almost 30 years, Justice Antonin Nino Scalia was a larger-than-life president on the bench. A brilliant legal mind with an energetic style, an incisive wit, and colorful opinions. He influenced a generation of judges, lawyers, and students, and profoundly shaped the legal landscape. He will no doubt be remembered as one of the most consequential judges and thinkers to serve on the Supreme Court. Justice Scalia dedicated his life to the cornerstone of our democracy, the rule of law.
And it's not that we would disagree with that statement, but that it comes from a president who has long desired to cast off the restraints of the U.S. Constitution. That just struck me yesterday as I was listening in the car ride home, to Brad McDonald's broadcast, as he was playing that quote where the president acknowledged that he was a brilliant legal mind, Scalia, and acknowledged that he dedicated his life to the rule of law. To the rule of law. And yet here you have so many in government today, even within this administration in the White House, who in so many ways are dedicated to tearing down the rules of law. President Obama said in 2011, he was being interviewed by NBC about people that were people on his side who voted him in that were frustrated because he wasn't making the radical changes fast enough. The transformation, fundamental transformation, that's what he aimed to do coming in. And the president said, what's frustrated people is that I've not been able to force Congress to implement every aspect of what I said in 2008. Well, you know, it turns out that our founders designed a system that makes it more difficult to bring about change than I would like sometimes. And so he sees the Constitution and the founders as something that's negative. I'll play a clip for you later where he says as much, or he did in 2001, several years before he became president. In any event, as I say, he wants to cast off the restraints that are there in the U.S. Constitution. Going back to that National Review article, this is their editorial board. It says toward the end of the piece, more important with the court so evenly divided, with President Obama such a proven devotee of a living constitution that simultaneously upends settled legal understandings and liberates executive power. And with an election less than 9 months away, this is no time for feckless accommodation over the future of the Supreme Court. It says judicial imperialism is a cancer in the body politic. It would only metastasize with another Obama appointment. And so the National Review, like so many other voices out there, they're saying it should be put off. It should wait until President Obama's out of office, until the American people have a chance to weigh in on this, until we have a presidential election in November. But notice there, it talks about President Obama being such a proven devotee of a living constitution that upends settled legal understandings and liberates executive power. Let me play for you what he said in a 2001 interview. This is, again, many years before he became president. But in this interview, he's criticizing the U.S. Constitution, this legal document on which the United States was established.
That generally the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf.
He's a big proponent of big government, the government doing more on your behalf, whereas the Constitution, it's just a document that contains negative liberties. It says what the federal government can't do to you. If it wasn't for that old document, look at how much further along we could be in our fundamental transformation of the United States of America. What's frustrated people, he said, what's frustrated them is that our founders designed a system that makes it more difficult to bring about that change. And so he's working along with many others who are allied with him in the White House, in Congress, in the Supreme Court to cast off those restraints that are there in the United States Constitution. Remember what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said in Egypt just a few years ago. She said, she told a group of Egyptian reporters that she would not look to the U.S. Constitution when establishing a nation today. If I were drafting a constitution in 2012, she said, I wouldn't look to the U.S. Constitution. I'd look somewhere else. I'd look maybe to South Africa's constitution. That's what she said. She serves on the United States Supreme Court. That's the kind of people that are right there in the Supreme Court. If you go back to 2009, when President Obama nominated Sonia Sotomayor, she's now on the Supreme Court as well. I think she came in after, I believe it was Justice Souter resigned. In any event, at the time, President Obama said that he wanted to fill that vacancy with a judge who exercises empathy, with a judge who has a heart for the poor, someone who really had concern for the special needs of the downtrodden. This was the criteria. Not the rule of law. Not sticking to the Constitution. Thomas Sowell at the time, when this nomination was going forward, he wrote that for more than a century, believers in bigger government have also been believers in having judges interpret the restraints of the Constitution out of existence. See, we've got to cast off those restraints. Because we're living in different times, and the Constitution needs to evolve along with us. Sowell says they called this a living Constitution. It has, in fact, been a dying Constitution, as its restraining provisions have been interpreted to mean less and less so that the federal government can do more and more. That's what's happening. They're crying out for a living Constitution, when in fact the Constitution's dead. The Constitution's being written by judicial activists. The Constitution's being rewritten by executive decree. My father, of course, Brad McDonald, referred to America Under Attack yesterday, but you can go back to many other writings over the years. No Freedom Without Law. I think that came out originally in 2001. There's a chapter in there titled Justice and Our Evolving Constitution. Character in Crisis. I believe we pulled that together in the 1990s. Character in Crisis. No Freedom Without Law. America Under Attack. In the No Freedom booklet, my father says the only perfect law is God's. The framers of America's Constitution founded much of that document on God's law as they understood it. Proper judgment must always include law. That's why it's so crucial that judges not change the righteous law or reject it. Look into that chapter again, Justice and Our Evolving Constitution. And read about where this is leading. My father said in a Key of David program back in 2009, if we as a people don't obey the rule of law, then we fall victim to the rule of man. This leads to the horrifying rule of brute force. If you don't want the rule of law, fine, you can cast off those restraints. And then you fall victim to the rule of man. We're witnessing a fundamental transformation. Laws are being redefined. The rule of law is being undermined by the rule of man. So where is it heading in this election year, as if 2016 wasn't as crazy enough as it is? Well, one thing that you can be sure, this administration came in from the get-go saying that we're here to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And this administration has succeeded at every turn. Nothing, no one has slowed it down. The Republicans haven't stopped it. Nobody's stopping it. This administration has gotten pretty much everything it's wanted. And of course, if you look at America under attack, you understand why. You understand why. And of course, you know there's a spiritual dimension behind all of this as well, this radical transformation. Should we expect then, after it's an administration that's gotten everything it's wanted, should we expect then that because a few Republicans are saying, well, now you ought to not nominate someone and let the next president take care of it? You really think that's going to happen? We don't, like Brad McDonald said yesterday, we don't know how all of this is going to unfold. But suffice it to say, given what God has prophesied, given the direction that we're heading in, however it sorts out, whoever makes the appointment, do you think the Supreme Court in the months ahead, do you think the Supreme Court in the years ahead is going to swing more in the direction of the traditionalist, originalist interpretation of the Constitution, or more in the direction of the living, breathing, evolving Constitution? Which direction do you suppose it will swing toward? Well, I think it's pretty obvious, even based upon prophecies like 2 Timothy 3. It's just going to get worse. It's like my father said on that Key of David program. We'll try to track down that clip so you can hear it again. I only had time to just get the transcript. If we as a people don't obey the rule of law, then we fall victim to the rule of man. America Under Attack points out that all of this destruction, this attack, it comes from within. That's what we're witnessing right now. And it opens up America for an attack from without. Make sure, like Brad McDonald said, you get that booklet out again so that you can appreciate better just how bad it actually is. My father said many can see that the nation is on the wrong course and is rapidly losing its moral character and its strength. Many people see this. It's up most of the recent polls, in polls from years ago, something like 70% of the United States. They know we're headed in the wrong direction. About as many know that our children are going to have it worse off than us. My father says in America Under Attack, can you detect this evil spiritual influence in our world today? It's a real spiritual power, and it almost mesmerizes people with its lies. This points right back to Revelation 12:9 and the fact that Satan has unmatched powers of deception. There's a great spiritual dimension to all of this. And look, this, as bad as it is, the situation in the United States is worse than even most people realize. What's going forward, no matter the political wrangling that's going to go on now for the next several months, what's going forward and gaining momentum is this audacious plan to fundamentally transform the United States of America. That's what's happening. And it's worsening. It's intensifying. So you can step back and look at what happened over the weekend and just know that whoever the replacement is, it doesn't even matter. Like I alluded to earlier, we'll get into this here in the next segment. But look at the Supreme Court and the rulings that it was churning out, even when it had Antonin Scalia as a justice. We'll look at that, as I say, a little bit further in the next segment. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily radio show on KPCG. 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond. The live stream's available at thetrumpet.com and the KPCG website. Send us those emails. We got quite a few that have stacked up over the last several days. I went through a lot of them this morning, but keep sending those in. We'll get more into the listener feedback in the days ahead. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Returning back to that National Review piece, the editorial board about the death of Scalia, it said here, his abiding contribution was in trying to stem the tide of government by judiciary. It says, when puncturing the pretensions of levels of scrutiny or skewering the progressive invention of rights, quote-unquote, to abort the unborn or to change the legal definition of marriage, Scalia was the great dissenter of our age. As I said earlier, for three decades, he was on a mission to rein in this runaway Supreme Court. And as I said before the break, even with Scalia in the court, even with him as one of the nine, this was already, as a collective whole, it was already a judicial activist court. Look at what happened last year, just 7-8 months ago, when five of the nine Supreme Court justices decided that the U.S. Constitution endorsed same-sex marriage in every state. Doesn't matter what the states determined. It doesn't matter what the votes of the people determined. Five of the nine, a majority. Five of the nine decided that the U.S. Constitution endorsed it. Enough said. Arguments over. We've made the determination. We've made the decision. This is how Justice Kennedy explained it in the majority opinion. He said the generations that wrote and ratified the Bill of Rights and the 14th Amendment did not presume to know the extent of freedom in all of its dimensions, and so they entrusted to future generations a charter protecting the right of all persons to enjoy liberty as we learn its meaning. When new insight reveals discord between the Constitution's central protections and a received legal stricture, a claim to liberty must be addressed. Well, they understood that we'll get new insight, that as we progress, we'll have to have new interpretations on the meaning of the Constitution Now, that's a statement coming from a justice that believes the Constitution of the United States should be an ever-changing, living, breathing document. Here's another statement from that opinion on homosexual marriage. This was from June, just last year, 2015. Anthony Kennedy wrote, "Since the dawn of history, marriage has transformed strangers into relatives, binding families and societies together. Confucius taught that marriage lies at the foundation of government." Did you know this? Did you know that's what Confucius taught? There's no mention of God in the majority opinion. No mention of God. No mention of God's laws. But we have the teachings of Confucius. Oh, yes. Well, if you followed us at the Trumpet when this was happening, you may have read some strong comments of condemnation, of dissent, the great dissenter of our age, coming from Antonin Scalia. He says in his dissent, "If even as the price to be paid for a fifth vote, I ever joined an opinion for the court that began," and here he's quoting from Justice Kennedy's introduction, this majority opinion, "the Constitution promises liberty to all within its reach, a liberty that includes certain specific rights that allow persons within a lawful realm to define and express their identity." Scalia is saying, if I ever joined an opinion for the court that began like that, I'd hide my head in a bag, he said. I'd hide my head in a bag. He was known, as even the president alluded to in that clip. He was known for his devastating wit, his humor, to make some very profound points. Scalia said, "The Supreme Court of the United States has descended from the disciplined legal reasoning of John Marshall and Joseph Story to the mystical aphorisms of the fortune cookie." That's where we are today. So much for the rule of law. So much for the disciplined legal reasoning of John Marshall and Joseph Story. Now you could write an introduction for a majority opinion coming out of the Supreme Court and use a little slip in a fortune cookie. Scalia said, "I join the Chief Justice's opinion in full. I write separately." Well, he's talking about John Roberts. John Roberts wrote a dissent. He says, I agree with that dissent, but I write separately to call attention to this court's threat to American democracy. Scalia felt like he needed to write another dissent in addition to John Roberts to warn the United States how this is threatening our government. It's threatening our democracy. It's threatening our foundational institutions. This evolving, living, breathing Constitution, this ever-changing Constitution. He said, "This is a naked judicial claim to legislative, indeed super-legislative, power, a claim fundamentally at odds with our system of government." It's fundamentally at odds. Well, this is the fundamental transformation that so many in Washington want, as they cast off the restraints of that old, outdated document. This is what they've been hoping for. This is what they've been planning for. This is what they've been dreaming about for decades. A system of government that makes the people subordinate to a committee of 9 unelected lawyers does not deserve to be called a democracy, Scalia said. In his dissent, it doesn't even deserve to be called a democracy, what's happening here. The people now have no say. Five Supreme Court justices decided on their own that this is now law. John Roberts, in his piece, I don't have the quote in front of me, but to paraphrase, he said, when that hearing was made official or announced the decision, he said, look, if you're for same-sex marriage, you can go ahead and cheer today. But you shouldn't be cheering for the Constitution or that this is somehow constitutional. It's not. Back to Scalia's dissent, he said, today's decree says that my ruler and the ruler of 320 million Americans, coast to coast, is a majority of the nine lawyers on the Supreme Court. Now go back. Go back to what my father said in that Key of David broadcast, that Key of David program. Where is it here in my notes? He said, if you don't want the rule of law, then we fall victim to the rule of man. And that's what Scalia said last June, just 7-8 months ago. Today's decree says that my ruler and the ruler of 320 million Americans, coast to coast, is a majority of the nine lawyers on the Supreme Court. The opinion in these cases is the furthest extension, in fact, and the furthest extension one can even imagine of the court's claimed power to create liberties that the Constitution and its amendments neglect to mention. It's all done in the name of liberty. Oh, well, it's not mentioned, and so we've got to add this. And all that this does is bring people, 320 million Americans, underneath the brute force of the rule of men. He talked at one point in his dissent about how that these nine justices on the Supreme Court, they didn't even really represent the makeup of the United States, those 320 million Americans. He said, take, for example, this court, which consists of only nine men and women, all of them successful lawyers who studied at Harvard or Yale Law School. Four of the nine are natives of New York City. Eight of them grew up in East and West Coast states. Only one hails from the vast expanse in between. Not a single Southwesterner, or even, to tell the truth, a genuine Westerner. California, where Kennedy hails from, does not count, he says. Not a single evangelical Christian, a group that comprises about one quarter of Americans, or even a Protestant of any denomination. Scalia says the strikingly unrepresentative character of the body voting on today's social upheaval would be irrelevant if they were functioning as judges. Okay, so they mostly come from Yale and Harvard. They're mostly from the Northeast. And none of that would matter if they were really functioning as judges. But of course, he says, the justices in today's majority are not voting on that basis. They're suspending their role, their responsibility as a Supreme Court justice to be a judicial activist instead. Confucius taught that marriage lies at the foundation of government. And so we're just following his example. Confucius. This is no longer the rule of law. It's the rule of lawyers. It's the rule of leftist, progressive, liberal lawyers. That's what it's turned into. And it's actually taking away the freedom is taking away the freedom of Americans. Again, go back to no freedom without law. You take away the law, you are not going to have freedom. That's for sure. You remove the rule of law and the Constitution, and you give way to tyranny. In James 4 and verse 12, it says, there's one lawgiver who's able to save and to destroy. Who are you that judges another? There's one lawgiver, the great God. And as my father brings out, in No Freedom Without Law and in some of his other writings, so much of that founding document, the Constitution, or to take the Magna Carta here in the UK, so much of it was based on biblical laws, on biblical principles. God is the lawgiver. Anthony Kennedy, Justice Kennedy, made no reference to this supreme lawgiver, but instead to Confucius. I mean, that's just astounding to think about that appearing in a majority opinion that makes same-sex marriage legal in all 50 states in the Union. No wonder, Scalia said, the Supreme Court of the U.S. has descended from the disciplined legal reasoning of John Marshall to the mystical aphorisms of the fortune cookie. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond. The live stream is at thetrumpet.com and kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The Trumpet Daily.
Well, speaking of the rule of lawyers, Jesus had an interesting and revealing exchange with a lawyer in Matthew 22, the last several verses of that chapter. Matthew 22 and verse 33, it says, "And when the multitude heard this, they were astonished at his doctrine." This was the impact that Christ's speaking and teaching had on the masses. It was just an astonishing message that he brought. And verse, but that didn't stop the detractors and the antagonists and the persecutors from coming along and trying to trip him up at every opportunity that they could. Verse 34, but when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. So they came together. Verse 35, it says, and then one of them, which was a, a lawyer asked him a question, tempting him, and saying, so this lawyer comes forward in an attempt to trip up Jesus Christ. Verse 36, it says, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? And Jesus said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. This actually comes right out of the book of Deuteronomy. Verse 39, and the second is like unto it, You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Let me just quote to you what Lang's commentary says about this exchange and about the answer that Jesus Christ gave to this lawyer. It says, Jesus not only penetrated and convicted the wicked design of the Pharisees, but also reproved the error which lurked in their question. He acknowledged a distinction between the great commandment and the rest, so far as the former is the principle and all others derived from it. But in another sense, he acknowledged no distinction. The derived commandment of love to man is equal to the first in its absolute value and as representing the first. It all flows out from the law of love. Verse 40, it says, On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Everything hinges on this. Everything hinges on law. That's what God's law is. It's love. Love is the fulfilling of God's law. Not the kind of love that you hear talked about so much in the world today, even in the world of religion. Keeping the commandments is loving God. That's the truth of the Bible. And that's what leads us to freedom. You can't have freedom without law. You can't have freedom without the law of love. Verse 41, it says, While the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them. So here, Jesus Christ goes on the offensive. He says, saying, What think you of Christ? Whose son is he? They say unto him, The son of David. He said to them, How then does David in spirit call him Lord, saying, The Lord said unto my Lord, Sit you on my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. It says, If David then call him Lord, how is he his son? Christ was just exposing their contradictions and their thinking. Verse 46, And no man was able to answer him a word, neither does any man from that day forth ask him any more questions. So they gave up, these Pharisees and Sadducees, this lawyer, they gave up. The legal wrangling stopped. Christ stopped them in their tracks. That's because he knew the law. He was grounded in the law. When he quoted from the law, he was quoting from Deuteronomy 6. You say this, you see the same spirit that you see in the U.S. government, in the White House, in the Supreme Court, in Congress, the same anti-law spirit. You see it in religion. I mean, you can notice it more there, in fact. Picking and choosing what it wants to believe and teach from the Bible and dismissing the other things that it doesn't agree with. Because, well, the Bible needs to be an evolving book, doesn't it? That's what so many believe. There's so many passages and texts and chapters and books and events, lessons, laws, they just don't apply to today. So we've got to change it. We've got to have a different interpretation of it. Mr. Armstrong used to talk about, Herbert Armstrong, he used to talk about how that everyone, every theologian has a different opinion of what the Bible actually means. And you can come back to some of the statements that Scalia has made regarding the U.S. Constitution and say, look, it's a legal document. It's text. Are you going to believe it? Or are you going to ignore it, dismiss it? Or are you going to try to change it and make it say something that it's not actually saying? Are you going to distort it, twist it, pervert it? Every time man does that, It just makes matters worse and worse and worse because there's no freedom without law. What you have when you do away with law is anarchy. It's every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. That's what Justice Bork, or Judge Bork, had to say in the 1980s. He wasn't on the Supreme Court. But he said, if you don't have a constitution, if you don't have law, then all that you're left with is some man's opinion. And so as my father said in that Key of David program, I think it was from 2009, you do away with the law, and what you're left with is the rule of men. The rule of men. Look at how much our nations have degenerated to be ruled now by a group, a small group, a small band, for the most part, of lawyers. Lawyers who believe the law should evolve. Paul Johnson, by the way, he points out in his book, The History of American People, that from 1960 to 1985, the U.S. population increased by 30%, and that during that same time, the lawyer population multiplied by more than 130%. We've got all these lawyers. And we have so, and the movement couldn't be stronger to revise, to do away with, to make the Constitution or the law into something that it's not. There's one politician years ago who said that Americans make up 5% of the world's population, but we provide 70% of the world's lawyers. They're just all over the place, and yet so little understanding of law. Let's just conclude over in the Gospel of Luke, Luke 11. Here is Christ once again, just being uncomfortably direct with those that he spoke to, and as always, grounded in the truth of the law, Luke 11 and verse 43, it says, "Woe unto you, Pharisees, for you love the uppermost seats in the synagogues and greetings in the markets. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are as graves which appear not, and the men that walk over them are not aware of them." And then verse 45, "Then answered one of the lawyers, and said to him, Master, thus saying, you reproach us also." Someone stepped up, a lawyer as it was, and said, "Well, when you say these things, you're insulting us lawyers too. How could you do that? How could you do that?" It says in verse 46, "And he said, woe unto you also, you lawyers, for you laid men with burdens grievous to the bone to be borne, and you yourselves touch not the burdens with one of your fingers." Verse 47, "Woe unto you, for you build the sepulchres of the prophets, and your fathers killed them. Truly you bear witness that you allow the deeds of your fathers, for they indeed killed them, and you build their sepulchres. Therefore also said the wisdom of God, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of them they shall slay and persecute, that the blood of all the prophets, which was shed from the foundation of the world, may be required." Well, you can go on and read the rest of the chapter. I don't have time to finish all of it, but there's some exchanges there that Jesus himself had with lawyers, and of course, many other prophecies of the Bible. Isaiah chapter 59, for example, the book of Micah. My father gets into that quite a lot in his booklet on the prophet Micah's text, the prophet Micah's book in the Bible. Habakkuk also talks about perverted justice and law, judges corrupt. there's so much of it in the Bible that God has some strong, strong views on the subject of law, law and order, the rule of law, the way that a lawyer or someone that's been educated in the law of God ought to rule just judges without showing partiality, without getting into what they think. It all gets back to what God's law has to say. You undermine that, whether you look at it in the spiritual or the national sense, and everything begins to crumble. Well, that is all that we have time for on this program. It's gone by so quick. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG, 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond. Don't forget to send us some feedback in the days ahead. Email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.